Senate Committee on Environment and Land Use, and we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 890. Senator Bruce Starr, would you like somebody to come up with you on this, Bruce? Mike Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm State Senator Bruce Starr, representing Senate District 15, Western Washington County, the communities of Hillsborough, Cornelius, Forest Grove, and North Plains. Appreciate the opportunity, Mr. Chair, to testify in support of Senate Bill 890, a bill that that I've had introduced that deals with a topic that I don't have a huge amount of experience in, but I've had a little bit of experience in, and it caused me to think about this issue, and I just want to encourage the committee to again hear the bill and hopefully we can move the bill down to revenue where it can continue to work. I had the opportunity in last fall to spend 2 weeks in China. And in my 2 weeks in China, I think I saw the sun twice. I saw blue sky a couple of times. But as I looked at the world there, and I looked at the world here, I longed to come home and breathe fresh air. I also, in my private sector life, I worked at the Portland Business Alliance. And I worked next to, in a very confined space, a colleague there that was working. Her title was New Economy Manager. And what she did is she set up a series of hot teams, and they were called hot teams that were working to facilitate the next generation of innovation. And one of those hot teams focused on this whole renewable energy, the sustainable energy area. And so almost by osmosis and the fact that we're in a very confined space, I could overhear a lot of her conversation and what she was working on. And so I know that, and I know that there is a cluster of economic a cluster within our economy that's dealing in this particular arena of sustainable energy, clean energy. And as I thought about my world here and what I knew a little bit of the economic development side of my private sector work, having traveled to a place that in my mind would benefit greatly from from the kinds of technologies that this bill is looking at, I thought, what can we do here in Oregon? One, to support an industry and a economic cluster, I think, that's developing in Oregon. And what could Oregon do because of where we're located to help the rest of the world, the developing world? And I was in my 2 weeks in China, I was amazed by the size, scope of the development, the speed at which a country is developing, a burgeoning middle class, already congested highways, freeways, but they're building more and more. You have a middle class that's going to grow, and all those folks are going to buy additional vehicles. What could America do to support an economy like that, like China, as we move forward? If any place in the world is in need of clean energy, not saying that the United States isn't or couldn't benefit from this, but the place that I visited there, having been there for about 2 weeks and traveled to 8 different cities in that time, I just thought, well, what can we do? And so I introduced and had legislative council work up this bill. It provides a tax credit against costs for clean energy facility research and development. Again, let's incent the private sector to be innovative, creative in breaking through those next barriers. In my mind, this bill's broader than this, but in my mind, fuel cells are how I see world heading. Clearly, there's some challenges in front of us today as it relates to fuel cells. The energy it takes to separate the hydrogen atom, the hydrogen is the biggest one of those, I think. Storage of hydrogen is another one. But this bill is broader than just fuel cells, and I think that that's one reason why I think that there's some support within the cluster here that we're talking about. There's a blank in the bill. The amount of the credit is left blank. If this committee wanted to work it, we could amend in a number in there. I'd be amenable, Mr. Chair, if you look at this and see value here and wanted to send it down to the Revenue Committee where we could further work it and have the Revenue Committee work to identify the right number. Mr. Graney and I have talked, as well as Brad Higby, is also, we talked yesterday, I'm not sure if Brad's made it here this morning, about working on this issue and working on this bill. I guess at this point, I think I will stop my testimony. I didn't introduce this bill on behalf of this particular constituent or a particular business that said, "Hey, Senator Starr, would you, we've got this great idea for this bill." It was really just born out of my own experience and a desire to foster both on the private sector side innovation, but also looking long term at a what I think are very real issues, very real needs. Clearly in the United States, but also around the world, as we look at the soaring costs of energy today, our dependence on fossil fuels, I think that we ought to be looking at ways that we can get away from those. In my mind, let's let the private sector do what the private sector does best and be innovative. And if we can incent that a little bit by a tax credit such as this, I think all the better for it. So with that, I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I'd be happy to answer questions or turn the microphone over to Mr. Graney.
Thank you very much, Senator Starr. Senator Shields.
Yes, Senator Starr, I think what you're saying, and I wanted to ask you, I'm sure that Mike may chime in on this, but what you're essentially doing is rolling things back one step further back than they are now. In other words, right now you can get a credit for, solar panels on your roof. You can get it for a windmill. You can get it for a hybrid car like I drive. You're just wanting to go the next step back to the research development phase. If that's true, and if that's your idea, what's the trigger point that you see? I mean, I don't think anybody should get a tax credit for an idea that's still in their head, and yet it's a little late when it's in your bill. It's a little late when they've already got the prototype up and running. Where is the trigger point?
I think that's a good question, and I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head, but I do know that we have research and development tax credits currently in other high tech areas, and my guess is that we could borrow the trigger points that maybe we use in those for those purposes. That would be my guess. I don't have specific languages or trigger points kind of in my head right now.
Okay.
But I think we have a template that we could borrow from if we needed to.
Thank you.
Senator Byron.
Thank you. Senator Starr, I don't know what the definition of alternative fuel devices in 469-160 are, but would alternate fuels be considered, like biodiesel and methanol, would those be considered?
Mr. Graney's nodding his head. I would guess that would be yes.
Okay. Just a comment. It seems that Senator Shields' question, in line 20 of the bill, it says, for costs incurred. So I guess until a corporation or a person could show they had a cost incurred in the design and production, they wouldn't be a tax credit. I don't, so.
Yeah, I'm just a comment. I think this is exactly in the right direction. We had a hearing on Friday up in Portland on whether Oregon should adopt California's vehicle emission standards. And we pointed out that it's a matter of, excuse me, Senator Starr, you talked about, you know, not being able to see the sun in China. I mean, it is a matter of the human health aspects of breathing the pollutants, the particles in the air. It's a matter of global warming. And it is a matter of national security. I mean, to the extent we can reduce our dependency on foreign fuels, it improves our security. And so I think your bill helps move in the same direction in the exact same ways. So thank you very much. Mike?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Rainey with the Oregon Department of Energy. The Senate Bill 890 does fill an important gap. As Senator Shields pointed out, we have a number of incentives for actual purchase and implementation and deployment of renewable energy. This bill provides, I think, an important incentive at the earlier stage for research and development of new technologies, renewable energy fuel cells and alternative fuels, including the ones that Senator Beyer that you mentioned. It could also help further the goals of bringing more renewable energy manufacturing facilities to Oregon, which we're actively trying to work on. That was a major part of our renewable energy action plan. I'll just say, while we haven't had the opportunity to sort of bound what the revenue impacts might be, I have spoken with the governor's office about this, and they would like to see the bill move and continue over to revenue as well, so we can work on any bounding that needed to be done. And I think that between in the revenue committee and perhaps through rulemaking, we could more thoroughly define what's eligible costs that would qualify for the tax credit. We've done that in our other tax credits.
Okay, Senator Shields.
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Graney has hit on my key point, and that is for costs incurred gets defined by how much money you might have. You know, the trigger points can move depending on what's available, and so he was talking about what might be eligible and what might not be eligible, and that's the determining factor to me. If you want the free market to work, it'll take some thinking so that people know when they launch into this that in fact their particular project will be eligible, because if it isn't, it might work as a disincentive rather than an incentive. And so those guidelines become important.
Mm-hmm. Kim, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else to add?
Nope. I just apologize. I wasn't more this morning. So.
No. I had a couple questions I wanted to resolve, and let's talk about this, but I would like to work on moving the bill to revenue.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. So let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 861. Committee, I'm sorry, 890. We have three bills that I'd like to, that are currently scheduled under work session, and I think will take about 2 minutes each. So I'd like to do those bills, then go back up to 861 and work on that bill. So let's open a work session on let's do Senate Bill 125, Roy Elliker. Can you just come up? We're in work session. On this, oh yeah, I'm Senator Fisher too. I'm sorry. My committee staff is keeping me from making blunders this morning. I mean, just for the committee, my understanding is that you recall the piranha bill we had earlier that was going to outlaw carnivorous piranha. I'm sorry, herbivorous piranha. Well, now we're going the other way and just make it so that there are no regulations on piranha. But go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bill Fisher from 268 Aiken Lane, Roseburg, Oregon.
Good to see you, Senator Fisher.
Thank you. It's good to be here under this capacity. I'd like to give my support to the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 125. I've worked with the ODF&W personnel, and I think that they've got a very reasonable thing going here with the -2 amendments. I did just want to mention that under their wildlife integrity OARs, there's also a prohibition of owning some of the fish that are outlined here in the Dash 2 amendment. And they've agreed with me to change that when the bill becomes law, if and when it does. And I am satisfied with that and would support that. That particular portion, and it's kind of difficult here, it's under 635-056-0050, section 1, little section, subsection C, under prohibited fish, it's capital B and Roman numeral I. And it's on page 5 of the 056 division. So I just wanted to put that on the record, and they've agreed to change that when the appropriate time comes. So thank you for your time, and be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Ellenker, anything to add?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, only that I think this does clear up a bit of confusion here in the law regarding possession of piranha, and the department worked with Senator Fisher to put together this amendment, and I would like to go ahead and see this move ahead.
Through the Dash 2 amendments.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson. Move the Dash 2 amendments.
Senator Atkinson has moved the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 125. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended to the floor to do pass recommendations.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill, 125 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Let's open a work session on 7:37. Mike, do you want to come up on this one briefly, please? Committee, this was the bill that we passed out to the Senate floor.
Concerns. That's right.
It's back, so we're seeing it again. Go ahead, Mike.
The heat of the bill.
Thank you, Chair. Mike Brainy from Department of Energy. This bill, again, authorizes development of renewable energy on state property. Two issues that came up, I think, in the discussion on the Senate floor were whether there was too broad a language, generally too broad an authority given to Department of Administrative Services, and to a lesser extent to the other state agencies to develop projects, and secondly, to assure that there's budget review and authorization for the projects that go forward. The Dash 1 amendments address both of those issues, and they narrow the scope of the authority. I think they still do what the committee wanted in terms of the projects going forward, but they make it clear that it is subject to budget oversight and review. I might also add that it's likely that any of these projects would cost more than $500,000, and that makes it a capital project, which means it'd have to be light items in the agency's budget and also show up in the capital construction budget. So you actually have two opportunities to review those projects. Even a single windmill would cost more than $500,000. And I've talked to a number of the members who had concerns with the bill who aren't on the committee, and they told me they were fine with these Dash 1 amendments.
Okay. Senator, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, move the Dash 1 amendments.
Senator Atkinson has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 737. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 737 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Thank you very much. For the audience, we will not be moving forward today on either Senate Bill 834 or Senate Bill 699. So let's move those off the table. Let's go ahead and move to Senate Bill 861. Let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 861. Senator Witz, sorry to keep you waiting, and would you like to come up as well, Ted? Thank you very much. Okay.
Good morning, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Senator Doug Whitsett, representing District 28. My testimony will be very brief this morning. As a veterinary professional, I personally consider the repeated and habitual forced overfeeding of fowl to be less than humane procedure. At the least, this practice certainly cannot be good husbandry. The practice serves no beneficial purpose for the bird and, in fact, results in gross fatty enlargement of the liver. This hepatomegaly is unquestionably detrimental to the long-term health and well-being of the bird. I think you have a proposed amendment for this this bill. I think the one that I'm concerned that you do adopt is the one that strikes the part about grazing, because this could be narrowly construed to be anything that any practice that would cause a bird or other animals to eat more than they normally would in a grazing situation. To be made illegal, and this could certainly affect broiler operations. It could certainly affect laying operations, and so I think that part should be stricken. Otherwise, I support the bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Senator. Are you familiar with this practice of force feeding the geese? Have you?
Not intimately, but fairly.
You've seen it. Okay. Well, thank you. That was brief testimony. I'm sorry that you had to wait to give that. Senator Shields, do you have any questions?
No.
Okay, thank you very much, Senator Whitsitt. Again, I apologize for having you wait. Go ahead, Ted.
Good morning. I have to apologize. I'm in the process of losing my voice. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Teddy Kaiser, and I appreciate your hearing this bill today. I'm on the staff of Senator Joanne Berger, and she represents Senate District 5. That's a coastal district. I feel that it's important on a topic like this that you have an opportunity to see what it is we're discussing. I could talk and talk about this, and I don't think you'd ever really get an image of what that is. But at the same time, I don't want to sensationalize cruelty. I want to glorify cruelty. So I wanted to ask if it'd be all right if I show a 6-minute video.
Yes, you may.
Thanks.
We may choose not to watch all 6 minutes of it, depending on how it goes.
The forced feeding begins when the ducks are just 3 months old. From this point on, the ducks have a long metal pole repeatedly shoved down their throats. Through this pole, they are forced to ingest a pound of food, a tenth of their healthy body weight.
Mr. Kaiser, where was this video taken?
This is a compilation of a number of different farms. There are two production facilities in the U.S., Sonoma, Foie Gras in California, and Hudson Valley in New York.
Oh, this is one of those two?
I believe the ones with the individual cages is New York, and you'll later see some that where there's many birds in one cage.
It's Sonoma. 3 times a day, every day. Devastate the birds. Here, an overstuffed duck struggles to hold himself upright after being force-fed. Countless others suffer neurological problems due to the confinement and forced feeding. access to water, central to Adept's life, is almost non-existent. In the cold of winter, even what little water the ducks have often freezes. To remain healthy, ducks must be able to immerse themselves in water. Even when not frozen, the water is so limited that the ducks cannot clear the mucus from the nostril-like holes on their beaks. This often leads to infection, blindness, and death. Conditions on the factory farm leave the ducks weak and vulnerable. Here, two ducks are literally being eaten alive by a rat. They have been rendered so weak by life on the factory farm that they are barely even able to struggle. Hudson Valley's Michael Zenor states, "If feeding was indeed cruel, one would expect to see unhealthy birds on foie gras farms. As we have seen, one does. In fact, the entire science of foie gras production strives to slaughter ducks just before they would otherwise die from stress and disease. This science is not exact. The pre-slaughter mortality rate of ducks raised for foie gras is up to 20 times the average rate on other duck factory farms.
Sorry we didn't show that when the rest of the committee was here.
Yeah, what? Where'd they go?
They have a caucus meeting.
Oh, sorry about that. You have to take it to caucus and show this again.
Have you talked to the Oregon Restaurant Association folks about this?
From my understanding, they're not working this bill.
Okay.
The Oregon Grocers Association has said that they have nothing. They're not opposed to this bill.
Okay.
I think in the interest of time, and considering we have so many people here that have come for a morning hearing, more than you'd expect, I think it's best that we let the people talk rather than staff.
Okay.
So I think maybe if there's other unresolved questions after the others have had a chance to testify, and I could come up and answer those at that time.
Well, that'd be fine. Thank you very much, Ted.
Okay.
Just to let the audience know, we have about 10 or 12 people signed up on this bill. Four people are against the bill. The rest of them are for the bill, and I'm going to gradually just generally alternate the testimony. So thank you very much, Ted. Craig Sparks and Connie Teal. And I would also ask folks that this, just in the interest of keeping it brief, I think that video really showed things as pretty much as you could describe, but go ahead and add things as you think appropriate. So go ahead. Mr. Sparks, why don't you start?
Yes, sir. A committee of one, eh?
Committee of one.
My name is Craig Sparks. I live in Pacific City, Oregon. I'm the director of the North American Wildlife Alliance. That's a six-state wildlife and wildlife habitat restoration organization. I also run a wildlife rehab clinic, and I'm state and federally licensed. I'm here on behalf of Senate Bill 861. We support the banning of this practice of foie gras, and we support the banning of the practice of farming it and as retail sales. I have firsthand experience with this operation and firsthand experience with the rehabilitation of ducks. In that little piece of video you saw, if you'll recall, you saw a lot of shivering and shaking of those animals. That's caused by two primary causes. One is hypothermia, because ducks are unable to preen in their cages, and in those conditions, they need water. They need a lot of water to do that. And feathers, if not preened properly, as you probably know, then do not provide hypothermic insulation. Therefore, they're unable to stay warm, and very often they develop a disease called aspergillosis, which is a form of pneumonia. Also, the feeding process, and I didn't see what was exactly in that video, but the feeding process very often overspills the ducks. That means that it fills their nostrils, and they also aspirate the food that's stuffed down that throat into their lungs. That aspiration of that foodstuff also causes pneumonia, and very often they die from that. That's where a lot of mortality comes from. It's a horribly inhumane process. I'm sure there's lots of people here who will back that up. It should be banned. It's an archaic and barbaric process. We're not here against any restaurant owners. We're not here against any grocers. We're not here against any individuals. It's a horrible, awful process, and it should be banned. If you have any questions, I would entertain them.
You know, I have a question. I don't know that I've ever had foie gras. I assume that it is a, you know, it comes from the geese liver, and originally they weren't force-fed. It was just they were the natural-sized livers that were eaten, and that the force-feeding occurs just to make the livers larger.
That's correct.
But theoretically, I mean, you could still have foie gras in restaurants, but you'd have to go with normal-sized livers.
I mean, right. The marketplace probably would say, you know, the force-feeding is what we're looking for because they need sheer volume.
Yeah.
From a natural process,
You
know, they take advantage because it's a seasonal issue. Okay, that's this time of year the animals are putting on weight. That's why they do that. That's a natural process.
I see. Yeah. Thank you very much. Connie?
Hi, Jeremy. Thank you for the honor of letting me speak in front of you today. I've been an animal advocate for many, many years, and I must say this practice takes the cake. It really does. This puts me in mind of ancient Rome, where any type of practice is allowed, no matter how heinous or cruel. It just really reminds me of something that's just so hedonistic that it's just beyond the pale. And I do want to really strongly suggest that this bill does pass. Couple of quick points here. The pre-slaughter mortality rate for foie gras ducks at the 20 times greater than our other duck factory farms. And the European Union concluded in 1998 there is no humane alternative to this practice. And I do ask that you consider voting yes on SB 861. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Could I remind you, sir, that just recently California did ban this process. It was signed by Schwarzenegger just recently. There is pending legislation in New York also.
So if that... And that, the bans, do they relate to the consumption of... or I should say the sale of foie gras, or is it the production of?
Both, I believe. And neither one of those take into effect until 2012.
I see.
To give the sole producer, which is in the Sonoma Valley, time to retool.
Okay. Well, thank you. We may hear the rest of that story right now. Thank you very much. Guillermo Gonzalez?
Good morning. Chairman.
Sonoma County.
My name is Guillermo Gonzalez. I am a citizen of California, and I am the foie gras producer. It is my duty to be here today because the reality of my activity and my livelihood is very wrongly depicted, as you I didn't have the need to watch that video because I know what it's about, and I can tell you only that that is the result of criminal acts, which were the fact that my farm was trespassed 12 times in a period of about 1 year. They mix images of different farms. One of those farms is allegedly mine. There are images there of farms in Europe. In other words, that is an edited video that certainly is very gruesome. I acknowledge having seen it, and I firmly declare that that does not represent the reality of my farm or foie gras production as a whole. Okay. I went through the process of testifying before the California Senate, and I think the most important share that I can present today is that the result of the hearing of the Business and Professions Committee was totally different than expected when one senator had the principle of not necessarily going and deciding through images that obviously were doctored, but he took the time to come to the farm, spend 3 hours at the farm. I showed him exactly everything as is and as is performed on a daily basis. And when everybody had presented their testimony, he said, well, I can just say that what I've heard, they didn't show that video at that time, but what I've heard in the people in favor of the bill testimony does not represent what I saw. That immediately had the effect of changing the position of other senators in the committee, saying, well, we cannot ignore what Senator Machado is saying because he was there. In other words, I'm paying attention to the words of like the gentleman who introduced the bill. You know, I believe, I think, it's a matter of perception. I think this is an animal husbandry issue, and as such, needs to be framed within the veterinary science. Unfortunately, through all this process, nobody has had the time to devote all the resources to go and study all the scientific evidence that is available, pro and con. So this is not an absolute issue. You know, you have different opinions. But my appeal to you respectfully this time is that I don't want to waste your time discussing technicalities or animal husbandry or who's right or who's wrong, because we are not in the right environment to do that. My appeal to you is to your highest wisdom to believe also and to understand that this is not about foie gras. Foie gras is just the platform that a very powerful movement in the United States, comprised by more than 100 organizations working, you know, they divide their tasks, and some do the good, some do the bad, and some do the ugly. But they have enormous budgets, over $200 million altogether, and their aim is against animal agriculture altogether. So they, and I respect what they, you know, everybody may have the right to believe this is a free country. But nobody has the right to impose on others their beliefs. So my appeal to you is to go beyond the scope of what they are trying to portray, to vilify me, to make me look like a barbaric person. I am just doing a practice that certainly is not common in the United States. I came to the United States 20 years ago, moved from El Salvador with my family in order to make an honest living and to contribute to society. And I am perfectly at ease in my conscience, and I just want to define this case in the realm of animal agriculture and in the scientific arena. So, in essence, I think we have to broaden our perspective and look at this as just a stepping stone on the overall campaign against animal agriculture. I have been subject to lawsuits. I have been subject to legislative action. I have been subject to vandalism. I have been subject to media campaign that video was shown, and it has been shown in many TV stations in the Bay Area and all over the United States. Some media people have contributed and are allied with the people who oppose, and I think it's unfair to pretend to solve an issue that is so particular within the frame of just simple perception, because nobody really knows exactly what is this about, and it's important to get to know it. Thank you very much.
Excuse me. Thank you very much for coming up to Oregon and testifying, Mr. Gonzalez. Do you have a video of your operations?
I do. It's a how can I say, non-professional video.
That's okay. Is it something you have with you?
Or no, I don't have it with me. But I can provide it.
I completely agree with you that we need to make decisions based on facts, not hysteria, not misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of misinformation in this building, and so I agree with you in that regard. I found that video disturbing.
It is.
I think that it is important that we be humane to animals, and so I guess I would like to know the reality of what happens in your operation and the other operations. Could you just tell me a little bit about when you said part of the video reflected what was from your farm? Do you force feed the geese in the way that was depicted in that video?
Well, I wasn't able to observe today these images, but it is true. We use intubation. That's the way to deliver the...
intubation, that means the tube down the throat?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
And that is a non-injurious process due to the fact that the anatomy of the duck is perfectly adaptable to it, because ducks don't have crops. And
they don't have what?
Crops.
I see.
In other words, there's no interference with the introduction of the tube.
I see. Okay. Which part of that video was from... well, I guess you didn't see it. I was going to ask which part of that video was from your operation, but you didn't see it.
Well, we do not use individual cages, so ducks are in collective pens.
I see.
And something that I can say very importantly also is that I would never pretend that our operation is a perfect operation.
Okay.
No animal agriculture is a perfect operation. Right. There are animals that are weak. There are animals that die. It's impossible to avoid that. What happened is that through these 12 break-ins that we had at our farm, the reason why they broke in 12 times was precisely to try to find the images of those weak ducks, of those dead ducks, of those that are the fraction of what really happens. And in fact, this is something that was also testified before the committee in California through by a veterinarian who came and said, well, yes, it's true, there are lame ducks, but there are 1.5% or 0.5%, you know, there's always that. You go to a dairy farm, there are even infirmaries. You go to any activity. So okay. I'll be happy to provide you with a video of my operation.
Sure. Thank you. Senator Shields, do you have a question?
I guess my only question would be, if there's inaccuracies in this video,
yes,
how would we be any more certain that there wouldn't be inaccuracies in a video that you would provide us? What I'm saying is, you know, I get taken on tours all the time. Mm-hmm. I toured a prison 2 weeks ago. I'm sure things were a little better than usual when I was there. I did a tour of a private forest not long ago. I'm sure that, you know, I'm led to see certain things and maybe not see other things. How do we guarantee the viability or the accuracy of a video?
Yes.
This one or yours?
Yes. I totally agree. And I think the only way to guarantee it is for someone like you or one of your appointees be present and come unannounced anytime. And I am open completely to that procedure. Because it's very important to know that we in animal agriculture are committed to the welfare of the ducks. We definitely not consider our farms to be showcases or zoos or you know, they are farms. In farms, you have all sorts of predators. You have all sorts of adversity that you have to deal all the time. We do not pretend to be perfect, but we strive and we do our best efforts to provide the best conditions for the animals, because that's the way they are going to produce our reason to be in business, which is the best product, the best quality possible, and that's what keeps us in business.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and again, thanks for coming up to Oregon.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming here. Diane Locke, Sarah Aitkoff, and Matt Russell.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I guess I'll go first.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you for hearing me, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Sarah Aitkoff. I live in Portland, Oregon, and I will be testifying as a concerned citizen. I kind of feel like a deer in the headlights, and I'm nervous, so I'm just going to read.
I'm sorry, could you speak a little bit louder and a little bit slower?
Okay. I'm nervous.
Don't be nervous.
I'm just going to read it from my paper that I've written.
Okay.
I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today. A few months ago, I had never even heard of foie gras. Then I attended a meeting where they showed video footage filmed at the two foie gras farms in the U.S. I watched while two ducks who had been force-fed were so weak that they were being eaten alive by a rat. I was so disturbed by the images, I felt the need to do something, and that is why I am here today. I am asking you to vote yes on Senate Bill 861. Foie gras is a practice that is so inhumane, and it is at the extreme end of cruelty. Some will say that birds in the wild engorge themselves before migration, and then that force feeding mimics a natural process. But those birds never feed themselves to the point that their livers swell to 10 times its normal size. They would not be able to walk, let alone fly. Also, when the wild ducks, those are the ones used in the production of foie gras in the U.S., are a hybrid product of a non-migratory species in the first place. Thank you for your time, and I encourage you to please vote yes on Senate Bill 861.
Thank you. That was easy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Diane Luck. I live in Portland, Oregon. I'm here as a concerned citizen in support of Senate Bill 861. With Mr. Gonzalez's testimony, he claims that the things in the video are not what happens on his farm, but he didn't really say what happens. But and as Senator Shields pointed out, how can we be sure which video would be accurate if either one of them? But the fact remains that these birds are force-fed 3 times a day, and their livers are swelled to 10 times their normal weight. I don't think anyone in this room, including Mr. Gonzalez, perhaps, would condone this kind of treatment of animals if there weren't money involved. So really what this boils down to is how much cruelty are we willing to tolerate in the name of profit. The ASPCA says that these birds are experience excruciating pain on a daily basis because of the condition of their livers and the rest of their health. I don't think any of us in this room, again, would tolerate that if it weren't for money. So where do we draw the line is the question. And when we're talking about animals who are suffering excruciating pain on a daily basis, I don't see how we can possibly support that kind of cruelty. Please vote yes on 861. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Ms. Rossell.
Chair Ringo and members of the committee, I want to thank you for the opportunity.
Just for the record, your name is?
Yeah, my name is Matt Rossell, and I'm here representing 80,000 members of In Defense of Animals and about 4,000 of those who live right here in this area. And I wish we were as well-funded as Mr. Gonzalez reports, but the fact of it is we really, our organization had nothing to do with bringing this bill before you today. We're very pleased, and we're definitely supportive of Senate Bill 861 to ban the force feeding of ducks and geese, but we're not behind this bill, and we weren't in any way initiating it. I found out about it after the fact. But I do want to comment a bit about what Mr. Gonzalez said about the kind of the he said, she said of this video, and I also appreciate Senator Shields, your comments about how everyone may have an interest in what they want to show in terms of the production. I do know that I have spoken intimately with the folks who did that investigation, who were on the farm and filmed, and I strongly believe that all of the shots on those videos are from the two U.S. farms. There's no footage in there from any farm in Europe. And, in fact, I think it's important for the committee to hear that those activists who did willfully trespass to capture that footage, they initially wrote polite letters to these farms, and they requested a tour. And Mr. Gonzalez ignored their requests. And I think this is telling, because if there really is nothing to hide and if the door is wide open, why is it that you're not willing to let humane organizations like the Animal Protection and Rescue League come in and take a look? And the shot that was filmed, that definitely was filmed on Sonoma Farms, where the ducks are being grabbed and the tube is being forced down the neck, I just spoke to that investigator yesterday, and he told me that the reason why they were going back over and over again was because they tried to place a hidden camera in a way that it would capture that process. And it was a technical problem that they couldn't get the camera aimed in a way that would capture that process. And so finally, not knowing what else to do, he just walked in on the process as it was happening. He captured that film. It was very candid. He walked in while they were doing it, just as Mr. Gonzalez said, a unannounced visit, and that is what you saw, was an unannounced visit. There was a communication barrier because the man doing the procedure spoke only Spanish and the investigator spoke only English, and so he just continued to force feed the ducks while someone was standing there in full view with a camera filming that. And so I think that what you have seen is a candid example of what's happening on his farm. And this is, foie gras is a tradition that dates back to ancient Egypt. It's very popular in Europe, France especially, around holidays. This is a staple food for them. And I think that you know, to avoid this he said, she said of which video to believe, I think we can go and look at the European Union, because they have been dealing with this issue much longer. The controversy has been around as long as foie gras has been around, and the European Union has been wrapping their head around this issue, and they have requested a report. They requested a report on the procedure from their Scientific Committee on Animal Health and Animal Welfare, which consists entirely of internationally recognized animal scientists. And that report is available online, and I'd be happy to give you access to that. They determined that force feeding as currently practiced is detrimental to the welfare of the birds, that no process should be used that results in an increase in liver size such that its function is significantly modified, or that it directly or indirectly increases mortality, pain, or distress to the animals. No feeding procedure should be used that results in substantial discomfort to the animals, shown by aversion to the feeding procedure or to any other indicator.
Get just a couple more minutes. We've got a long list here.
Basically, the bottom line with that report was that the only way to meet the recommendations is to ban foie gras. They have been trying to find a humane way to produce foie gras in Europe and in France for years, and they just haven't come up with it. So I think that the bottom line is we would really please ask the committee to support Senate Bill 861. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, all of you, for your testimony. Mm-hmm. Any questions?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming here. Pascal Sutton, Thomas Hurley, and Jeff Latham. Who wants to start? Yes, absolutely.
Mr. Chair, Chairman Ringo, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Latham. I live in Portland. I represent all 18 employees of my company and 36 local sustainable farms that I work with to promote antibiotic and hormone-free, healthy, as healthy and humanely raised farms as we can find. And I'm here today to oppose Bill SB 861. Regardless of how much emotion proponents of this bill express to you and the media, there are no scientific facts to support legislation that would damage my business and my livelihood. I'm one of few Oregonians that have toured the facilities of both the foie gras producers and that I have worked with since first introducing foie gras to Oregon in 1994. I found nothing in the proponents' propaganda campaign to be consistent with what I saw in the fields or in the gavage stage of my producers. This video that you saw today, I saw one clip that might possibly be the Sonoma farm. The reason I can say this is neither Hudson Valley or Sonoma keep their birds in individual confinement crates. They were never allowed to do it from the beginning. The establishment of the foie gras industry in this country is not the same as it's done in France. The proponents of this bill want you to believe that the way that we do it in this country is exactly the same as France, and it's not. The pictures that I saw, I sat in the front row today because most of my customers have received this video asking them not to use foie gras, but I had not seen it yet. So today I sat in the front row and looked at that and was appalled. It's nothing like what is happening at the farms in Sonoma or Hudson Valley. The USDA inspectors that inspect the birds after production would not allow birds that are diseased, that are harmed like that, and these birds are very valuable birds. Guillermo and the people from New York care about the animals that they raise. It's not that they are very valuable birds. Why would they let 20% of the animals die like other people in this room want you to believe? It's not the way that those pictures are portrayed. It's like a scene from a Hollywood movie that has been distorted to let you believe that that is part of our industry. I would never be a part of an industry that would treat birds that way. The birds will not...
I just have a question. What is your business? I didn't follow you. Are you a distributor?
We are a processor and distributor in downtown Portland of several dozen local farms of rabbit, quail, Anderson Ranch lamb, buffalo from Oregon, venison from Oregon, all humanely raised. My growers are not supposed, you know, we try to have the best local sustainable agriculture, and foie gras is not produced here and probably never will.
You process the meats, though. They're delivered to you in some form. You process them and get them ready for restaurant consumption.
Restaurants, retailers.
I see.
Amazon.com.
I see. Okay.
You know, shipping nationwide and internationally.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And this is not a foie gras issue or a force-feeding issue. Repeatedly in local media and national media, the proponents that support this bill have stated that their goal, and their ultimate goal, is to obtain a meatless society. I'm here because it scares me that this could be the tip of the iceberg of what they want, and using a distorted video to convince you that that is what the industry is about. The American Veterinary Medical Association has declined to support either side of this issue until adequate studies of the issue are complete. In a state that is struggling to find a way to adequately fund public schools, fire departments, and law enforcement, I find it hard to comprehend how tax dollars will be taken away from schools to help enforce this bill if you were to support it. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hurley, do you want
to? Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me the opportunity and the committee to speak this morning. My name is Thomas Hurley, and I am the chef owner of a premier fine dining restaurant in Portland, Oregon, that has been targeted seriously. And I would like to share with you the first gentleman, I'm sorry I don't remember his name, to testify on behalf of this, that stated that they're not personally going after anyone is false. My restaurant has been targeted by serious terrorist activities, and to the tune of $20,000 in loss of revenue from these people making false reservations and not showing up because I serve foie gras.
But what's the name of your restaurant?
Hurley's.
I see.
In Northwest Portland.
Okay.
So I would like to share with you that this video that you saw, I would like for them to show the whole video, because when they bring their TV set and prop it up against your window in order to get the customer's attention, they splice in these huge orange, yellow, and white flashes. This is not about foie gras. Mr. Gonzalez was correct. This is about their cause. And quite frankly, most of them can't even pronounce foie gras, so the cause, it's about a meatless society. For us to be targeted, the last five recessions that this country has had, Oregon has been the last to recover. For these people to come in and try and take over our privately owned restaurants and force us to eat what they want us to eat is wrong. I support 12 employees. I spent 20 years as a professional fireman. My family's been in it for 148 years. I was at the World Trade Center for over a month. I know what inhumane treatment is to animals and humans. This is not inhumane. Mr. Gonzalez has a spotless reputation. Why would we serve birds that are diseased? We use duck because geese are not marketable as much as duck. My company, and I speak with chefs like Pascal and also with business owners like Jeff, we use almost the entire bird. We sell the breast, we sell the thigh, the legs, we use the bones for stock, we even use the necks and the head for stock, albeit people don't believe that it's used, but it makes a wonderful stock. These birds have been treated so well, the product is flawless, and people come to my restaurant from all over the world to eat this. And I would just like to share that if these people have such a strong argument, why do you have to stand in front of my restaurant, dress like my servers, tell the general public that you work for me, and hold signs that say people that eat foie gras are child molesters? I think you can see from the intensity in my demeanor and my voice that if you have a cause, let's go after it correctly, professionally, and let's stick to the facts, because these people have no facts. Putting me out of business is not the way to get your way, to get everybody to, first of all, not be an entrepreneur, and second of all, be a vegetarian or a vegan. Thank you very much.
Mr. Lee, I appreciate your testimony, and you know, I think you're right that we shouldn't try to force our opinions on everybody else, and
I'm one of those that I enjoy a good steak, but I also believe in humane treatment to animals. And for me, the question, I mean, you know, it is appalling if people have done that to a restaurant, and they have no business doing that. For me, the question is, how are these geese and ducks raised? And that, to me, that's, we need to get to the truth of that.
I understand, and I would like to share with you, anyone sitting here, if you want to go down to Guillermo's farm, I'll pay for it, and unannounced. And I say that with this intensity, that this is a beautiful place, and this is a man that has such passion and has worked so hard at what he's doing to help people like me have the type of facility that I have. And the force feeding, we can go on and on and on about force feeding and how animals are treated throughout the entire protein world. Getting to the bottom of it is correct, and I'm just urging you to open your mind, and for the entire board to open their mind and take a look at, if this is so inhumane, why does this organization have to go about targeting people like us and putting us out of business? Is that going to help?
Well,
it's going to cost the taxpayers a tremendous amount of money. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hurley. Questions from the committee? Okay, is it Mr. Pascal? Is that it?
Pascal Sutton.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Pascal Sutton. I own a restaurant, a small restaurant in downtown Portland called Carafe. I'm in opposition of the proposed bill SB 861. This is a very difficult issue to address here. It seems like everybody is talking about he says, she says. What I can say is that I respect everyone's opinion. I do not respect the procedures that are in this video. I saw it. It's been sent to my restaurant. And I absolutely do not respect what happened on that video. However, what happened in the farms, where the farm, the one farm where I buy my foie gras for the restaurant, I respect those practices. Guillermo, just like Mr. Hurley said, is a very sound businessman. He is passionate about what he's doing. And the reason I serve foie gras in my restaurant is because people ask me for foie gras. When I first opened my restaurant a year and a half ago, I didn't have foie gras on the menu. And month after month after month, people were asking me, please put foie gras on the menu, please put foie gras on the menu, please serve foie gras. They know that I'm French, and they know that this is something that I grew up with, and that I've been trained to cook. And it takes a very skilled chef to cook foie gras. It's not just a piece of meat. It takes a lot of respect and a lot of knowledge and a lot of practice to cook it. And I think that considering the state of the restaurant industry in Oregon right now, it would be a big mistake to make foie gras against the law. I think it is very important that with the recognition that the state of Oregon is getting and about gastronomy and about their culinary skills brings a lot of tourism in Oregon. It's becoming a premier destination for people to come in to eat in Oregon restaurants. And I really feel that removing foie gras from our menus would be a huge mistake. People travel from New York and Seattle and all over to come to Tom's restaurant or even my restaurant, which is very modest.
Just a couple more minutes, please.
Absolutely. I think that, like everyone is bringing on, it's a lot bigger issue than just foie gras or force feeding animals. And what I don't understand is why people come after foie gras when there is chicken, veal, beef, pork, raised with hormones, antibiotics. Those animals are caged their whole life. They are not caged in Sonoma farm. They're confined over crowded pens without any seeing daylights. those are the big issues that we need to go after. Small restaurants like Tom and I know where their product comes from. We buy from small farmers. We buy from farmers that we know. We know their practices. We know their ethics. And those are the people that we want to buy from. And that's why I buy Sonoma foie gras. That's why I buy my foie gras uniquely from Guillermo. I don't know the other practices. I just recently talked with someone who saw a farm in Canada where all the birds were raised in pens and cages. This is not the case here.
Just a question to interject.
Sure.
Let's say foie gras was made illegal in Oregon. I mean, don't you think people would still come to your restaurants, and some customers might miss that there's one item on the dish, but it just seems to me that you'd still have a whole range of good food, and people would still be coming to your restaurants.
Well, Mr. Sherman, the answer to your question is that when I put foie gras on my menu, which was in early December, I sold 200 orders of it. There was people that were coming specifically to my restaurant.
200 orders in the month of December?
In the month of December. That's correct. I'm a very small bistro.
What's the name of your restaurant?
Karaf.
Karaf?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Hurley, do you have a comment on that?
Yes, you're correct. We do have a wide range. But I will share with you that there are people that come to the restaurant just for that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only reason that they come. And quite frankly, since this has happened and the picketers showed up, I invite them to come back because it doubled my business other than the false reservations. It was great advertising. But we do have people that just come for that, that's all they consume. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Simpson, I just need to ask you to wrap up because I've
Absolutely.
Got 10 more minutes left and about 10 more people, okay?
I'm just, in finish, I just want to say that in the scale of animal torture, force feeding does not even measure. I would like to invite you to enroll you in assisting me in matters that need immediate attention, just like I was saying about larger issues like animals that are born with hormones and antibiotics and all kind of junk that we eat every day. And I really think that the restaurant that serves those products are the restaurant that should be picketed.
Okay. I really need to ask you to wrap it up, okay? Yeah,
I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I'll be available for any questions.
Well, thank you very much. Questions from the committee? I really appreciate you coming here today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Connie, I can't read the last name. Connie, is it Dirk? Dirk?
Dirk.
Dirk, okay, I'm sorry. Piper Dixon and Sid Must. Ms. Durkee.
Okay. I'm Chair Ringo and members of the committee. My name is Connie Durkee. I'm actually a volunteer at Lighthouse Farm Sanctuary that's here in Salem, Oregon. And I'm hoping you'll allow me to read a brief testimony from Wayne Geiger, who's president of the Lighthouse Farm Sanctuary, who wasn't able to be here today.
Briefly, please.
Okay. Very brief. I regret not being able to testify in person, but have more than 100 hungry animals to care for this morning. Thanks for the chance to weigh in about this important humane issue. I am writing to you to share my strong support of Senate Bill 861, which would ban the forced feeding of birds and sale of foie gras. I grew up on an Oregon farm and now have 30 years of experience working in the animal agriculture industry and in farm animal welfare. Currently, I am the president and caregiver at Lighthouse Farm Sanctuary just outside Salem. I am the president of the Oregon Animal Welfare Alliance, a network of animal welfare advocates and humane societies across the state, and served for 3 years as the animal welfare director of the Humane Society of the Willamette Valley. In my experiences, I have seen it all when it comes to farm animal abuse. I also am grounded in reality and know that most Oregonians are omnivores who eat meat. For that reason, we work to have sensible laws designed to protect animals or at least give them a humane slaughter. But when it comes to the production of foie gras, I don't think there is any humane alternative. The forced feeding process is so cruel, and the results of the overfeeding is so devastating to the birds in those final weeks of their lives that I believe it needs to be banned. Of all the abuses inherent in the factory farming industry, the production of foie gras, in my opinion, is near, if not at the top, of the list. Please consider voting yes on SB 861. And just my own comment, I would just like to say not one person here or anyone we've talked to who has been in support of foie gras has been so unless they have a financial interest in it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. That's true about a lot of things, Ms. Bill.
Yes, it is.
Go ahead, next.
Okay. Hi, my name is Piper Dixon. I'm from Portland, Oregon. Thank you for letting me speak with you this morning. I knew little of this issue a few months ago, as the woman earlier also mentioned, and the more I researched it, I'm very concerned about it because of the unnecessary cruelty inflicted upon the animals. And the fact that this item is considered a delicacy, so it's a high-priced item, so a small percentage of our community is consuming it, so it's unnecessary as far as our local food system. As a person who prides myself on a wide knowledge of a variety of food issues, I work for a local farm, and one who's also seen our communities making a move towards creating a local, secure, and safe food economy. I do not believe that food produced in this manner has any role in that formation of that food system. As citizens of the state of Oregon, we should be prouder of the food that we produce here in the state and consume. And one of the important goals as a community should be to ensure access to fresh, healthy foods for all its community members.
I just need to interject. We have to give up this conference room in 5 minutes, okay? So we're going to run through the next witnesses very
just quickly. I don't think this food produced in this manner is anything that we could be proud of in the state, and ask that you vote yes on this.
Thank you very much for coming to testify. Ms. Must?
My name is Sydney Most.
Most.
And thank you, Chairman Ringo, and the committee for allowing us to speak today. And I have been volunteering with animals for 32 years. I've been a vegan for 32 years. I have a state and federal permit for wildlife rescue. Geese and ducks can live to be as old as 17 years. No one's mentioned that today. I've been up close and personal with these lovely animals. Where do people go when they're on vacation? To the wilderness. This is the same bird that's being force-fed and will not live to be a year old. Okay, so I'm appealing from an emotional point of view, but nobody has mentioned how much we love animals, and I'm not ashamed to say so. I've been on all of their demonstrations, and we have always been respectful toward them. We've been respectful to the public. We've never used a swear word. There was one policeman at Mr. Hurley's location who came up to me the next week when I was there, and he said, "Sid, guess what? I haven't eaten meat for a week." So you're right. I'm making this a meatless society, and none of you is going to get away without being vegan, if I have anything to say about it. But I am very sincere. I care about these birds. It costs $20 for a little bit of foie gras this size.
You just need to wrap it up in a second.
It's not going to ruin their business. We don't want to ruin their business.
Okay. Thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Last few witnesses, Elle McKay, Nancy McKay, Kelly Peterson, and then the very last one will be Marcia Keith. And sorry for you guys to kind of get the last little bit here. But the Senate Majority Leader is going to throw me out of this room in my ear in about 2 minutes. So
you got that right.
I know. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Committee, I just want to thank you for letting us speak. My name is Ellie McKay. I live in Portland, and I'm coming to you as an individual concerned citizen. I just want you to know that 15 countries have already banned foie gras, and that is based primarily on the fact that it's an extremely cruel process. So this has been dealt with before. And I do care about the welfare of animals, and I ask you to do what you can to help ban such unnecessary cruelty from our state. As a native Oregonian,
I just ask you to
say yes on Senate Bill 861.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Nancy McKay, and thank you also for letting us have a minute here. I'm not a vegetarian, and I like a good steak, too. But I am definitely against cruelty to animals, and that's why I'm here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Kelly?
I'm Kelly Peterson with the Humane Society of the United States. We have 90,000 members here in Oregon, and I provided some detailed written comments that you have that I think cite a lot of scientific evidence that prove that suffering does exist on these farms. But my philosophy and why I got in and started working on this is that we're good stewards and we should treat animals with dignity and respect. And I'll leave it at that, but my comments are...
Thank you very much. Marcia, do you want to come and give us the last word?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Marcia Keith, representing the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association. You have my written comments. There's nothing in them that says anything any different. I'd just like to go on record and ask you to support Senate Bill 861.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate everybody coming to this hearing today. We're not going to move the bill right now, but we'll be looking into this more. So we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 861, and the committee is adjourned.
Thank you.